This is Tracy Hales Bass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I'm talking with Scott Graham about another one of his National Parks mystery series, Mesa Verde Victim.
Good morning, Tracy. How are you?
I'm really good. I was pleased to read Mesa Verde Victim and see again my old friends that I made with the other National Parks Mystery Series books.
Well, I'm glad you were pleased to meet up with them again.
And this one's a little different because it's like right in their own backyard.
It's in their backyard, and of course it's in my backyard as well.
Right.
I was raised in Durango and in Southwest Colorado, and so for Mesa Verde Victim to be everything that I get to write about is places and types of people that I know well has been, it was a real pleasure to do.
It seemed very believable, and I could recognize the areas.
Yep, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and the girls, well, wait, before I go any further, I better ask you to give our listeners a synopsis of Mesa Verde Victim.
Sure. So what we've got are the protagonist family, Chuck Bender, archaeologist, and his wife, Janelle Ortega, and her daughters, Chuck's stepdaughters, Carmelita and Rosie. They are, and have for the extent of the series, this is now number six in the series, have lived in and been based out of Durango. And in past books, of course, they were set in other national parks in the region, clear up in Yellowstone, clear out in Yosemite. And so Durango played a real minor role. It was just kind of referred to as a place where they lived. In this case, with regard to the synopsis, the action really takes off beginning with Chapter 1 in Durango and is focused both in Durango and in Mesa Verde National Park. What happens basically is that Chuck comes home to frantic phone calls and learns that a good friend of his has been murdered in the back alley behind Chuck's house, which is in the Grid neighborhood near downtown Durango. And that person who's been murdered, an archaeologist friend of Chuck's, is clutching an old an old postcard from way back when. And it turns out that Chuck's study, where he works out of as a self-employed contract archaeologist, has been rifled. And so that's the inciting incident that sets the plot in motion. And it harkens all the way back to 130 years ago when the original Gustav Nordenskjold did the original excavations of Mesa Verde when he came over from Northern Europe. So the story resonates back and forth from early archaeological explorations and excavations in Mesa Verde to present day, and focuses on the repatriation efforts that remain underway in museums really around the world and across the United States of human remains in particular that have been taken from places like Mesa Verde and stored away in, these are skeletal remains of humans who were taken and stored away in drawers and in basements of museums around the world, and the efforts that are underway to this day to return those remains to places like Mesa Verde and reinter them where they were taken from.
You must really know your archaeology.
I'm absolutely not in any sort of way a professional archaeologist, but I was raised here in Durango and in the Four Corners area, where all of us almost become junior archaeologists by dint of where we're raised here and all that we learn about this region and its archaeological treasures.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did, in fact, at the start of the series, when I started writing the series, I took the course that is offered by the State of Colorado Archaeological Office to those who wish to volunteer on archaeological digs.
Oh.
So I took that. It's like a one-credit level, college-level course. Hooked it up at Fort Lewis College when it was offered to at least get some grounding in true archaeological work. But no, I can't call myself an expert, that's for sure.
You could have fooled me.
But I do count myself as a lover of the whole archaeological process and the wonderful the wonderful history and awareness, cultural awareness that archaeological work raises for all the rest of us.
I like the comparisons you make between the human remains and their condition and the Egyptian process of mummifying?
That is in fact true. One of the places that we talk about, that I talk about in the book, and that we in the Four Corners are familiar with, a lot of us are familiar with, is the remains of mummified human remains of a female ancestral Puebloan who came to be known as Esther, and whose very perfectly preserved remains were found north of Durango, just a couple, 3 miles north of Durango's city limits as the crow flies, in the Falls Creek drainage. Those remains were found back in the 1930s, and Esther was actually displayed in a plexiglass case in the Mesa Verde Museum for many years so that people could come along and just look at her laying there. For awareness got to the point in the 1970s that her remains were stored away and then eventually reinterred in the Falls Creek area. Again, which is a story that plays out in the book. That's all a true to life story from which then I take my fictional leave to have fun with this story of the murder mystery.
I wondered about Esther.
But the fact that her remains were very, very well preserved because they were under an overhang in Falls Creek in the dry southwest air environment, which is very similar to the Egyptian mummified preserved remains that were found in Egypt. So there were and are true similarities in that way.
Chuck educates people a lot. And in one of these books, you go, where does it cross to fiction and where doesn't it?
And that's always the goal, isn't it?
Yes.
For me, of a murder mystery, is to have people asking that question. So I'm glad that I hear you, that you hopefully were asking that question as you were reading as well.
Yes, you pulled it off very well. And I had to go try and do some research myself on it.
Well, there you go. And you know what I did is I really counted on both the work of Gustav Nordenskjold himself. He wrote a book after his work was completed up on Mesa Verde when he returned to Northern Europe. That's called The Cliff Dwellers of the Mesa Verde, Southwestern Colorado. And so that book is out there. And then Judith Reynolds, many people may know Judith Reynolds, wrote Nordenskjold, she wrote the biography of Gustav Nordenskjold. It's called Nordenskjold of Mesa Verde. And so I depended on that. And then for the archaeological work, I really depended upon the work of Florence and Robert Lister. Many people know them and their work in this area. Their Prehistory in Peril was one of the books that was I really depended upon because it talks about all of the archaeological work that's been done in and around, specifically Durango, as much as Mesa Verde. That's the sort of real-life reference work that I did that I tried to bring to the book, and then had to be careful to, of course, not to treat it with respect, I guess you should
right.
say.
I think you've done that.
When I'm writing a murder mystery.
Right.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I worked hard to do that because I have such respect for, I think, what these treasures we have around here. And my goal, of course, with the series in general is to talk to people about these national parks that we have out here in the West and how treasured all these national parks are, and to talk about, in the realm of a fun and entertaining murder mystery, the challenges that our national parks face. And certainly Mesa Verde faces challenges that are significant and that could be severe to its future, both from climate change and the fires and the drought and what that could do to the villages, as well as the challenge of getting human remains as well as physical remains that were taken from Mesa Verde returned to the site, which is something that modern-day Native Americans and archaeologists and those who just care about this stuff have worked at for many, many years.
Yes, all of your books and the one coming up are based in national parks, and this is number 6.
Right, yes.
You do, they're all in the family goes to these different national parks.
That's correct. So the idea of the series, and it is literally called the National Park Mystery Series, published by Torrey House Press, and it's fashioned, you know, not unlike the mysteries of Nevada Bar, who had a ranger who is Anna Pigeon, and that ranger in the Anna Pigeon mystery series, she gets assigned to different national parks and then solves the mysteries in those parks. Right. In my case, of course, I've got an archaeologist who gets assigned to do contract archaeological digs and archaeological work in various national parks in the West. And then in his case, he takes his family with him. The bodies pile up, and for some inexplicable reason, the authorities on the case aren't taking care of things, and so as our amateur sleuth family needs to step in and kind of take matters into their own hands, and of course putting themselves in some peril in the process. And so that's the idea of the series. The underlying idea of the series is that it also be somewhat educational in a again a purely fun and interesting way is the goal, of course, to let people learn more about these places that we have that have been preserved as national parks that are just so incredible for any number of reasons.
Right.
And Masoretti being a real special place because it was the first national park ever set aside because of the human habitation that occurred in that place, not because of the geological amazement of it that you think of when you think of Grand Canyon or Yosemite or Yellowstone.
The educational aspect of it, but it comes across in such a readable way because Chuck is usually talking to his daughters or someone else and explaining things as a father would.
Right, and that's the goal, is to have this believable dialogue going on to where you've got folks. In this case, the key player is Rosie, the younger daughter, because she comes along with Chuck when he heads out to Masoretti to investigate a phone call that he has received about a dig that is underway on the edge of Masoretti National Park, kind of on the quiet out there, and that it learns that it may be somehow related to the death of his friend in Durango. So he takes Rosie with him, and then as they go to find out what's going on out there, they have a conversation, and that conversation then becomes ongoing throughout the book, where he's explaining to her, and she's saying, oh, she's really interested in learning more about archaeology. She's at that age. She's 12 years old in the book.
So, right.
She's at that age where she's really curious to hear what her stepdad does and wants to learn more about it. And so he's able to talk to her about not only what he does as an archaeologist, but the value that he sees in what he does as an archaeologist. And then through his explanation, of course, to her, I'm seeking to explain those values and those facts in a fun way to my readers.
Right. With plenty of descriptions of setting around them, which puts the audience right there. The description of setting is amazing.
Thank you very much for saying that. Of course, this was perhaps the easiest in that way because it's a setting that I've spent my entire life being directly involved in. On the other hand, I was a little scared as a result of that too, because I wanted to do our area here, the Four Corners area, justice, and so I was a little nervous going into it, but I feel good about what I've captured on page.
Yeah, you should. I think maybe this would be a good time for you to read a little piece of the Mesa Verde victim for us.
What I'm going to read is the start of the book, which is a prologue. And it is set 130 years ago at the time when Gustav Nordenskjold was performing his excavations in Masoretti. And I've taken a bit of a fictional leap, and I have got a young man who is working for Gustav, just as Gustav is getting ready to finish up his work and is leaving the country. And in fact, I'll go back a little bit and let people know that Gustav was actually placed under house arrest in the Strader Hotel in downtown Durango at the time that he was performing these excavations at Masoretti by people who were worried about Masoretti being excavated by a Northern European young man who was taking these goods, putting them in a boxcar, training them back to New York and putting them on a ship and taking them back to Northern Europe, but also by people who were concerned that he was taking treasures that they could actually loot and make money off of themselves. So it was kind of a combo there. And he was actually literally placed under house arrest for a time in the Strader, and therefore left town kind of midway through his work in a bit of a hurry. And so what I've got then is I've taken a fictional flight with that for this young man who's doing some digging on Gustav's behalf in the middle of the night in Mesa Verde just before Gustav is to leave. So that's kind of a lead-up to it. I'll give you just a couple minutes flavor of it here.
Okay.
Midnight was less than an hour away when Joey broke through a layer of dried mud and intertwined sticks with the tip of his shovel, punching into the chamber at the bottom of the depression he dug over the preceding hours. He twisted the shovel, ripping apart the thatched twigs to create a blade-wide opening through the roof of the vault beneath his feet. He squatted and reached through the opening into the concealed chamber, his arm disappearing to his elbow. Sweeping his hand back and forth, he captured only air in his extended fingers. He lay on his stomach and extended the full length of his arm through the opening. He grinned as he swung his arm through the stale air of the vault. This had to be the secret chamber Gustav sought. Joey's fingers struck something stone-like standing upright in the hidden space. The unseen artifact toppled over with a quiet clink. He withdrew his arm. The stale odor of must seeped from the vault. Thatched willow branches, sheared by his shovel blade, formed a ragged edge around the mouth of the opening. He gripped the thatched branches and tugged. A portion of plated sticks and dried mud the size of a dinner plate came away in his hands. He tore off additional chunks of stick and mud. He directed his lantern through the enlarged opening and into the chamber. The toppled artifact lay on the dusty floor of the vault beneath him, amid a dozen more of the objects lying upright on the bottom of the small room. He drew an exhilarated breath. The reward that the new life had promised him were nearly within his grasp. He placed his lamp in the dirt at the bottom of the depression and swung his feet into the opening to the chamber, preparing to shimmy into the secret vault. Clods of dirt rolled past him from above, tumbling down the side of the cavity he dug into the floor of the alcove, and the sharpened blade of an axe struck the top of his head. The axe cleaved his skull, parting bone and brain matter in a powerful, deadly blow. Joey's killer slid to the bottom of the depression and withdrew the blade of the axe from Joey's head with a slippery snick. Joey's body slumped sideways and lay twitching. The man tugged Joey's feet from the chamber opening and dropped into the hidden vault in Joey's place, crouching with his leather satchel over his shoulder and Joey's flickering lantern in his hand. So that's one of the beginnings there, the two separate beginnings, 130 years ago, and then present day is chapter one. So that's the prologue there, 130 years ago.
As the story evolves, we learn what that has to do with present day and what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, because we're referring, of course, to, in all these books, I kind of take a flight of fancy with some sort of an archaeological discovery that's admittedly and purposefully a bit over the top. And so what we've got here is the start off of a treasure, of course, that is being found or looked for and discovered in Mesa Verde 130 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then that resonates, of course, all the way through that specific find that we've just described.
Right.
Without giving away what it is, you know, we've introduced it at the very beginning, and then that mm-hmm. resonates all the way through to the present day.
So we're left going, what was that treasure?
That's the idea.
Yep. So the girls are really evolving, too. I like that with each book they get older and discover themselves more. Carmelita's has been established as an avid climber.
Yes, rock climber.
Mm-hmm. So I thought it was good this time that Rosie's more the center of focus and she's figuring out what she wants to do.
Yes, that's exactly what my goal was with her, was mm-hmm. that she's now kind of coming into her own adolescence. She's always kind of followed in Carmelita's slipstream.
Mm-hmm.
And Carmelita has always been the older sister who's excelled athletically, has excelled in school. Rosie is now at that age where it's time for her as the younger sister to start finding her own path. And so that was exactly what I set out to do with mm-hmm. her in Mesa Verde Victim.
I liked her very much. I was really getting to know her and like her, and Chuck's a great dad.
Oh, good. Well, I like hearing that because, of course, the series is set up so that he's a stepdad.
Right.
And at the very beginning of the series, six books ago, the books go one, because I'm coming out with the series books one a year, I've just gone ahead and had the girls and the family grow 1 year older with each book.
Mm-hmm.
So he's now basically 6 years into fatherhood, from having been a loner and a confirmed bachelor, right, and middle-aged. I mean, he's kind of old even for being a dad to these girls. So he really was a confirmed bachelor and has really had to learn his way into this fatherhood role, is what my goal has been for him in his development as a character. And so I'm glad to hear, because, and finally I wanted him to be doing, I finally thought, you know, it's time for him to be doing a good job as a dad. And right, I wanted him to finally kind of be finding his own footing as a father figure. And so that was one of the things that I did set out purposely to have happen in Mesa Verde. So I'm glad when you say he's being a good dad, I appreciate hearing that, because there have certainly been times in the past where you wouldn't necessarily say that without him.
He's learning.
In the past, really been kind of learning his role as a father, and now I feel like he's starting to get it down.
Yeah, he is. It's very believable. And in this one, we also see hints of his past and his bachelorhood.
And that does, and that resonates back to the fact that this is an old friend of his, of course, who was an archaeologist also, who was killed. And so we're delving into Chuck's personal past as well.
Right. Now, the next book that we see a little bit of in Mesa Verde Victim is The Canyonlands Carnage.
That's correct. That will be coming out next August. So Mesa Verde Victim just came out August 25th, and with Torrey House Press, and now we're in the process of we're a year out from Canyonlands Carnage, which means that given the timing that books undergo for their marketing purposes and their preparation purposes, I'm just now putting the finishing touches on the draft and the manuscript of Canyonlands Carnage, and then it'll go into the editing process from here. And the name refers to the fact that, again, many people around the Four Corners area will know that whitewater carnage, river raft flips in a rapid, and all of the people and the gear that are in the boat get tossed out. They call that whitewater carnage. So that'll be a clue to readers that Canyonlands Carnage is set, the plot is set in a cataract canyon river rafting trip that goes down first the arm of the Green River and then the main arm of the Colorado River through Cataract Canyon in the heart of Canyonlands National Park. So it's a river rafting journey that the reader will be taken on next year. Chuck and his family will be on.
So Torrey House Press is a really interesting and different publication house in that they're very concerned with environmental issues.
That's correct. They are the only nonprofit environmental publisher west of the Mississippi River in America.
Oh.
And they've been around just a little bit longer than I've been with them as an author. So I'm proud to have been one of their early authors and who have been a part of them as they have really grown and matured and come into their own over the last few years. And the result is that they are getting bigger and bigger named authors who are coming into their fold and publishing with them, and their sales are doing really well. They are doing just beautiful, really wonderful work on behalf of primarily public lands in the West. That's their focus, is public lands conservation and preservation. And so they've got a political leaning that is very clear in terms of they fight for things like the creation of Bears Ears National Monument just across the border in Utah. And they work with authors who are really dedicated to those sorts of endeavors. And so a lot of what they do is nonfiction work.
Right.
So they've got, and recently they've had authors who have been, who've done essays and books with them, who include some pretty big names. Craig Childs, people may recognize, Pam Houston.
Oh.
And so they're getting these really respected authors. They've reprinted some work. Terry Tempest Williams has been involved with them, and they've reprinted some of her work and her husband's work. And so they've really put out for people to read some of the top environmental writers in the country. And so I'm both humbled as well as honored to be a part of what they are doing. And of course, my work is of a quite different nature than that, in that I'm attempting to broaden the audience of people who would hopefully be interested in learning more about environmental issues, cultural issues, social justice issues, but through the entertaining side of a murder mystery as opposed to perhaps a more serious book of essays about environmental issues from a nonfiction side.
Yeah, it works really well. And I was
thanks. Yes, it's been a wonderful partnership. I mean, they are very appreciative of having me, and of course, I'm very appreciative of having them. And the opportunity to do a murder mystery series that I also feel like is seeking to do some good in the world is something that is very satisfying for me. I love reading mysteries. I have all my life. And just the satisfying of reading a mystery for pure entertainment is wonderful. But in my case, the fact that I'm getting to both work at writing entertaining fiction, but also doing some educating, hopefully, doing some awareness raising is something that is doubly satisfying.
And before we go, I want to mention the beautiful cover on Mesa Verde Victim.
Yeah, we should. We do need to mention that, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the story there is thanks to Kathleen Metcalf, who is the art director for Torrey House Press.
Mm-hmm.
She located the artwork of a gentleman by the name of David Jonathan for the cover of the book before Mesa Verde Victim, so number 5 in the series, which was Arch's Enemy.
Mm-hmm.
The first 4 books in the series were set in older national parks, and we were able to use paintings from the Hudson River painters who came out west and painted Yosemite and Rocky Mountain National Park and Yellowstone and showed those paintings to Congress to convince, they went back east and showed them to Congress to convince Congress to preserve these landscapes as national parks.
Hmm.
Of course, these 2 more recent books are set in national parks that are newer, and so the Hudson Valley and the older painters were long gone by then. So instead, Kathleen found this modern painter who does this beautiful, you wouldn't say abstract, but real striking, colorful Southwest landscape work.
Mm-hmm.
And his work sells in the highest, most fanciest galleries in Santa Fe and Scottsdale. I mean, if we were to physically be purchasing the rights to his work in any sort of a fair way, I know that we wouldn't be coming close. So I know that he has kind of joined in on this effort to lend his skills to what we're trying to do and what Torrey House Press is trying to do. And the result are 2 striking covers, both with Arch's Enemy last year and then this year with Mesa Verde. And you've got a cutting of Spruce Tree House Village.
Mm-hmm.
That is on the cover. That's just absolutely striking.
Very striking.
Yeah, and I can tell you, next year's Canyonlands Carnage is equally striking.
It's
going to be a beautiful one as well.
I look forward to that.
Yep, they're already working on that cover, and I just saw an early version of it, and it's again, all thanks to David Jonathan for jumping in with us on this, and to the folks at Torrey House Press for creating covers that I'm convinced are a real help to the series, because they really stand out on a bookshelf. When you're in a bookstore and you see these covers, boy, they are something that really attract your eye and attract your attention.
Just like the area, I think it really captures.
Yes, precisely, yeah. We do have, around here, we do have places that are certainly eye candy, that's for sure. And so for someone that, like David Jonathan, to be using his talents to capture them, and then for me to be the beneficiary of them on my covers, all of that is just pure good fortune.
Yeah, it works really well together. Listeners can find more information on your website, which is scottfranklingraham.com.
That's right. Yep. And Franklin as in Ben Franklin. So scottfranklingraham.com is my website.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to learn about Torrey House Press, they need only go to torreyhouse.org. And Torrey is, of course, Torrey, Utah, Torrey, torreyhouse.org, and can learn about Torrey House Press as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they can also go to davidjonathan.com if they'd like to look at some of his other work, because it's just fun to, tell you what, it's fun to go to his website and just see his work as well.
I did that a little bit, and it's really amazing.
Yeah, yep.
It was a good deal. Well, I look forward to the next one and the next one, and keep working.
There you go. Thank you very much, Tracy. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your interest in the series as well.
And that was Scott Graham talking about his latest book, Mesa Verde Victim, number 6 in the National Parks Mystery Series. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.